and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 647.
That's right. We are circling back around and doing some Emerald Influence, which is a series we started back in 2023. So, and haven't circled back around to it since.
I know. Mark, I actually 529. Is it at 529? Isn't that what the episode was?
Yeah.
Yeah. I looked before too. I for some reason thought we had done more than. Just one episode of that.
I've suggested more than one. But
God, violins playing. But including this one, which we have kind of tap danced around for a while. Not because we didn't necessarily want to do it. It's just because it was always something that came up in conversation about, oh, this would be a good this would be a good example of why we started the brand or the spinoff. But borderline spinoff. That but always something came up. And now it didn't, so here he is.
I would take that natural segue, but I do need to explain what Emerald Influence is, since we haven't been around this for a while. The idea essentially being, if you haven't heard one of our promos out on other people's podcasts out there, one of those promos is about how the Green Lantern franchise reaches into all corners of DC, sometimes in very influential ways. This would count as Emerald Influence. I'm not saying this is going to be an episode very soon, but that issue of Superman where we get Tomar Rey's backstory about where he was the day Krypton exploded, that's a good example of something big Green Lantern-wise touching something else in the DC universe that was told in an issue of Superman in a backup that was never told in the main Green Lantern series. So we're just kind of hopscotching around the DC universe, talking about those touch points that Green Lantern appears, which brings us to today and something Mark's been pitching for a while, at least half of this.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, more than in any other, as far as both stories.
Oh no, I'm talking the annual specifically.
But yeah, I mean, to be fair, I guess you are correct from the perspective that we probably had been talking about doing this story and touching upon the story in this annual long before the other issue came out to begin with. So I guess you're right, but I'm just meaning over the last couple of years we both have been.
I think you were suggesting this before we even came up with the idea of Emerald Influence.
You're probably correct about that.
Wanting to do this story for a while.
Yeah, that is true. Let's not raise the bar too high on what the story is. But yeah. I mean, it's a very fun story for what it is. It's not War and Peace here as far as the meat on the bone. I mean, it's a good story, but it's pretty succinct. But yes, but because it takes place in an annual which has a bunch of other stories, this is what you would expect to find. So.
And that story is
we're going to be dealing with the Doomsday. This story comes from the Doomsday Annual, Year One Annual, the 1995 series of annuals DC was doing, which was one of their, I think it was one of their more successful annual imprints back in the day when annuals meant something and they were doing annuals pretty much almost every year, that they tended to have a theme in annuals. And the 1995 one was Year One. We already did the Green Lantern annual, which was the Hal and Kyle crossing recharging their batteries at the same time. Well, Hal was technically recharging two batteries. But still, the point was how they ended up swapping positions, and Kyle ended up going back to living Hal's life, and Hal ended up living Kyle's early days, or day, for first few days after he got the ring with Alex and all this stuff. So this was a very successful, I thought, a very successful line of annuals in general.
Yeah, I liked Ghosts too.
I'm trying to. I think there was another annual.
There was Elseworlds.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, I thought there was another one from the year one line that I thought that I liked.
Gotcha.
But I could be being blinded by the fact that the Green Lantern one was so good. But the story in particular we're dealing with from this Doomsday annual is how interesting that the story is called In Blackest Night. Chapter 3 of the annual. So we have Roger Stern, writer. I think that's Spider-Man ties to Gil Kane and Jerry Ordway, artist. So you can pretty much go wrong there. And this is our Green Lantern story in this Doomsday annual, which fills in a lot of background information on Doomsday, including like Doomsday's first encounter with Darkseid that never actually becomes a fist fight, that until the Hunter Prey miniseries when Darkseid gets wiped out completely, which was so satisfying. But nonetheless, so we begin. This is narrated. We find out, you know, who it's narrated by at the end and the reason why we should care about this. But this, we're following the adventures of Zarin Pell, who is currently when this story is taking place, the Green Lantern of Sector 2813. And he's finding this ragtag fleet of refugee vehicles, essentially. And he finds out the reason why they're all hovering around the space station more than they can handle is because their planet is being devastated by this alien who turns out to be Doomsday. So Zarin Pell goes down to, and he kind of demands Doomsday surrenders. And of course, Doomsday shows no real ability or acknowledgement. That's the right word. Acknowledgement that he really understands anything that's being said to him. But he charges at Zarin, who raises an energy construct shield, and Doomsday gets repelled. And instead of being really, really concerned about this, Doomsday actually kind of like smiles and he's happy about this because he finally has a challenge that he's not used to dealing with. So Doomsday and Zarin Pell go back and forth for a while. Zarin Pell actually keeps getting pushed backwards. He finally enables all the will that he has and he throws Doomsday through like several walls. And at the end of the day, he encases Doomsday in a shell, a block of energy. And then he calls out to the Guardians asking for help, saying, hey, I have a problem here. And this guy is really, really difficult. And I have no idea if he's sentient or not. I kind of need help. While he's distracted talking to the Guardians, Doomsday starting to do his Doomsday thing and overcome anyway. And that, along with Zarin being overcome or being distracted, Doomsday breaks free, and now Doomsday is actually pissed. Doomsday is really, 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 really angry. So he completely goes off on Zarin, who's unable to block and stop any of these moves. But Zarin's still alive, of course, because this is the classic days when your ring is programmed to protect the bearer from mortal harm. But that only lasts as long as Doomsday rips the ring off his finger, and then Zarin's kaput. Now the Guardians. Now, Doomsday puts on the power ring, which is interesting by itself. And the Guardians, you know, I was going to say cry out to him. It's kind of like that. They speak to him saying, you have laid waste to this planet. You have slain the Green Lantern. You must answer for your crimes. And Doomsday, pretty much the way Doomsday operates, being trying to take out the nearest threat and everything else to him because his survival instinct is strong, uses the ring to like a homing device to start taking him to Oa. So very, very Emerald Twilight-like, which, of course, they kind of reference in this panel, in this splash page, too, that the Corps would not know another such defeat for hundreds of millennia, which is an Emerald Twilight reference, that Doomsday, much like Hal on the way to Oa, is being confronted by Green Lantern after Green Lantern, and he's beating the hell out of many of them, killing many of them. And the Guardians are trying to figure out what to do. Doomsday arrives on Oa, and one of the Guardians goes out there to take him on, and you know, because he's a living power battery, he thinks that's going to be enough. But as they keep going on and they keep fighting on longer and longer and longer, the Guardian is struggling even more, even more, even more. And the other Guardians say, hey, draw upon our energies. And the Guardian that's fighting Doomsday is bright enough to figure out, that's not the right plan here, because this creature seems to be adapting to my power and maybe even feeding on it. So if he's somehow able to overcome all of us pooled together, that he could destroy pretty much everything we've worked for and the entire universe. So he makes the ultimate sacrifice and he commits suicide. He explodes, and in the process, Doomsday's power ring gets completely vaporized. Everybody thinks Doomsday is dead on the surface, but Doomsday is just kind of sent flying through space. And I think technically, he's going toward Calatong, which is where Doomsday eventually meets his first defeat, his actual first true defeat, when he's quote unquote dead, was on Calatong, as we find out through the Superman lore. But we find out that this story is being narrated by Aunt Betta, and Aunt Betta was told all this by her uncle. And who is her uncle? Her uncle is Tomar Ray, who, as Chad just conveniently referenced, is or will be, or was, I guess was at this point, the Green Lantern of Sector 2813, also known as the guy having lunch when Krypton was destroyed. But the point was, we all know Tomar Ray, we like Tomar Ray, and that's the reason why Tomar Ray knows the story, is because he's protecting the same sector that Zarin Pell had been protecting. Arguably, he may know it just from Green Lantern lore, but because it's the same sector, I'm going to assume that that's the main reason he knows it, because it's sector lore.
It's a good story. The only thing I don't like about it is the fact that Doomsday can use the ring, but I think if you take that in the modern context, how we've especially been talking lately about the idea that there are different types of ways to express or feel love, and how that can interact with a Star Sapphire ring, and different types of ways to feel hope, and so on and so forth, there would then logically be different types of ways to feel or access will, and the will to push on and defeat and just keep
survive.
Fighting. Yeah, that's a type of will. So I can easily explain it away. Interesting though that, you know, he has caused such a problem to the core that don't they even mention the fact that they have to take time to replenish their ranks?
Yeah. Because they lost so many. They lost so many trying to stop him on the way to
Blew hundreds of Green Lanterns and left 1,000 more wounded and drifting across the vastness of space.
So the concept behind it is really cool. It is something that once we were introduced to Doomsday and beyond, you know, obviously Guy was the only real Green Lantern getting a chance to take on Doomsday at the time. And nobody really had a whole lot of respect for Guy at the time. So it was really hard to judge how a quote unquote really, really good Green Lantern would have done against Doomsday. And again, we really don't know. I mean, Zarin Pell clearly, based on the story that they're telling us, has a really good reputation for being an excellent Green Lantern. So we have to assume that while he may not be on the Hal John level, that he's pretty damn good. So the fact that, and he does hold his own against Doomsday for a while. It's just the fact that, you know, Doomsday is pretty much an unstoppable force. So you can only hold your own against him for so long, unless, you know, there's very few times in Doomsday has ever been stopped, and we know it's only a temporary reprieve. But I did like the fact that, you know, first of all, the way that, you know, the Guardians are kind of being drawn in the classic style, I thought that, even though I like the way they're drawn now more, as opposed to like old bald geezers with big schnozzes or big bulbous noses. So I kind of like the way they're drawn more today than that back in the classic time. But, you know, obviously with Gil Kane being involved, it makes sense we're going to get a lot of the classic look too. But I do like the story, and I do like the fact that the Guardians are being a little, first of all, they're being proactive. I mean, yes, it's not like the Guardians went out to confront this guy first, but of course it would make sense that they would try to use home field advantage and use your pawns as much as you could. That much is in common with Emerald Twilight, but you have the fact that when push came to shove, the Guardians were certainly, at least one was willing to get his hands dirty and do what was necessary, because he realized the threat is too great to just roll the dice on us being able to stop him before his power ring drains of energy and everything else. And it's like, I thought it was a pretty cool story.
Technically, this would be in the era where it would count if an immortal died, right?
I think so.
Like it's interesting that wasn't really followed up on, that a Guardian died. That should have some effect.
Yeah, that is true. But the little narration, the little a narrative device of having it be what Tomar Rey's niece.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, I think that's kind of cool. Obviously, we know there's a lineage, there's a continuing lineage with, you know, with Tomar Rey and Tomar 2 and all that stuff. So we kind of know that's a big family line there related to being Green Lanterns, including the whatever her name, I forget her name now, the girl Zudarian who ended up becoming Green Lantern mm-hmm. somewhere in, I think, yeah. the Hal and the Core run, wasn't it? Or something.
Yeah, I think so. I like too that because I don't think I knew this. Well, I knew it happened later because he gets more spacefaring later. But it's interesting that the news had reached Zudar that there's a lone Green Lantern out there. That the Core is gone, but there is still a Green Lantern.
Yeah, that is true because they do have the reference to Kyle, which makes sense because of course in this time Kyle is the only mm-hmm. in current continuity Kyle is the only Green Lantern.
Yeah, I'd never read this story before in terms of like the entire issue. I've read pieces of this particular story before, but I never read the issue in its entirety before. I don't really care for the Kund story. I found my eyes just running over it and having to go back a panel or two to make sure I actually read what was on the panel because I just kept skipping over it. But Green Lantern one is definitely one of the best of the bunch. Though the stuff that happened that technically killed Doomsday was interesting, you know, showing him getting put in the suit and the chains and everything. I think my favorite, or the most interesting part of this, I thought, was actually the framing device of this whole thing. The idea that Mitch, that kid from the Death of Superman story that stopped Doomsday and saved his family, and it was like kind of a little brat, we could follow Mitch. We follow up on the path of destruction that Doomsday wrought before Superman was able to fell him. There's all these narrative bubbles that talk about like, hey, see what this woman is talking about in Man of Steel 18 and seeing what this guy is talking about in Man of Steel 19 and so on and so forth. So that was cool because it just shows, I think retroactively, it really shows how big of a story the death of Superman was. Because only then would you get something like, we're going to dedicate an issue to Doomsday, but the framing device is going to be what happened to the people who were affected. But like they wanted to circle back to some of these people that were just sort of in the background as part of the story. And we came back to them for an entire dedicated issue, which was, I just think, unique. It's rare that you get to see that because, you know, getting to convince editorial or whatever to devote an issue and the printing and all of that to telling a story like this, you'd have to know that there have to be an audience, and people must have really cared about the death of Superman at the time, the death and return of Superman at the time, to be like, you know what, this is interesting enough to me. I think I might pick this up.
And this was still back in the day when Doomsday was not quite, he wasn't clearly as much of a blank slate. Because we already had gotten the Hunter Prey miniseries. So we already knew the original origin of Doomsday. We knew that that it was Kryptonians who, his Kryptonian roots, let's put it this way, and the experiments that had made him. We also were, I think we in that miniseries is where we found out the Kaliton origin. I think that's where it comes from. Of when, mm-hmm. how they defeated him and put him in that containment suit, and because that's obviously part of their tradition is of how they deal with the dead and things like that. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. That's where you learn that, because he ends up back on Kaliton in the Hunter Prey series, I think, because that's the reason. Because Superman arrives and it's too late because what the hell is that thing called? But they all pull their energy into, because they probably say it. The Radiant. I was going to say, they have to say it in this issue, that he's already, like, the Radiant's already dying because Doomsday is ripped through him, because of the fact that you can't kill Doomsday the same way twice. But, and I do like, and so obviously there's a lot of references here to the Hunter Prey stuff, because the whole Doomsday story, a Doomsday Dark Side story, is obviously a direct reference to what we know has already happened when he ends up on Apocalypse and Darkseid tries to take him out and Darkseid gets destroyed. I do like the Dark Side story, surprisingly, as one of the best ones in this in this issue. The Calatan thing is cool too, but again, I have ties to that from reading that stuff up at Doomsday. But it was good. I liked the fact that they were trying to flesh out Doomsday, and like you said, the fallout of Doomsday, the people who dealt with the survivors of Doomsday, and just how this domino of Doomsday has fallen and has affected so many different people and so many different planets and all the stuff since he was first created. I thought that was a pretty nice touch too.
Yeah. All right. Green Arrow.
Green Arrow.
All right, guys. Green Arrow number four. We're going back a little ways to the beginning of the dawn of DC. Parallax here. We're doing a story called Quiver Hour, written by Joshua Williamson with art and cover by Sean Izaskie. Interior and cover colors by Romulo Fajardo Jr. Letters by Troy Pateri. And edited by Ben Abernathy. I'm going to be very, very surface level about this. This is maybe, I don't want to say a bad, I guess technically a bad example of Emerald Influence, in that there are also times where Green Lantern shows up and you're like, oh, this should be a big deal. But it just ends up being not.
It ends up being Green Arrow number four.
Yes. Green Arrow number four. First of all, art. Great. We'll get that out of the way. That being said, we just open up with basically Ollie on one single page recapping his history with Hal, from contentious relationship to hard-traveling heroes, to a nice recreation of the panel sequence from Zero Hour where Ollie shot the arrow at Parallax's chest, to now Parallax showing Ollie in space, and he's got him covered in the energy to protect him from the vacuum of space, showing him a construct recreation of that moment from Zero Hour, trying to get in Ollie's head, and Ollie's having none of it, and he says, you're not Hal, you're just some weird alien parasite, you're a fake, and Parallax is asking, did a fake save the world? When the sun went out, did a fake resurrect you? Was that Hal or was that me? He's trying to dig into Ollie. Ollie is still having none of this. He says, and this is the only piece I'll read completely outright, that Hal told me all about you, some rogue fragment of a lost world in the multiverse. So what did you do? Just hide in the future? And then apparently Ollie found him and asked him for his help in the future and told him to keep his family apart by giving him a piece of temporal energy or whatever. Ollie says, that wasn't me. And he's like, all right. So now he takes him on this little quick trip to see how his family's doing on Earth without him right now, and how he's even though he's not there, the fact that he's missing and they're trying to find them is enough to put them in danger. Dinah and Speedy, they can't see nor hear him. That's not worth really digging into, obviously, because that's not what we're focused on. We also flash forward to the Legion of Superheroes, where they're dealing with stuff that's been happening in the issue. Obviously, Parallax just mentioned the future. This is all related to the ongoing story in the Green Arrow thing. Again, we don't need to focus on it because the only time Parallax is involved in the story is this particular issue. So this affords us the ability to just kind of skip over this stuff. Parallax then takes Ollie to the future, and Star City is in ruins and on fire and smoldering. We don't know what year. Parallax says it doesn't matter. Ollie gets pissed off and just decides to fist fight Parallax, which he obliges. Parallax eventually cheats by going, Green Lantern Rebirth style Parallax with the jaws and the twisted face and the Parallax or Sinestro Corps symbol in the mouth and all of that stuff. So he says, I knew it. I knew you weren't Hal. Hal wouldn't cheat, which I would argue Hal might cheat if it benefited him. But anyways, Parallax says, if you want the truth, enjoy it. And he fades away, leaving Ollie in the future where he has to face down himself, which looks a lot like a lot similar to himself from The Dark Knight Returns, except minus the whole missing the arm thing. He's bald. He's grayed. He looks like he's missing an eye or something like that. So he's definitely... he looks similar to Dark Knight Returns Ollie, but and then we get a solicit, you know, just about the next issue coming up, past, present, and future at war. But that's all we care about is the Parallax stuff, which, just to jump right into it, doesn't give us much.
No. And it's Convergence Parallax. I don't know if we made that clear yet. This is Convergence Parallax, which, again, is not for that one little statement by Ollie about Hal kind of told me about you, and which you did mention about the remnant of a past, you know, of a fractured reality, a lost world in the multiverse. If you left out that little sentence, we would have no way of knowing whether this was this Parallax, as opposed to the 0 hour Parallax just hopping and skipping through time. And this could, you know, because we know we did that. That's how we got Emerald Knights, because of the fact that he sent something wrong in the timeline. But that was 0 hour Hal. So it could have been simply 0 hour Hal, but it wasn't. Yeah, I think we both were looking forward to this issue when we saw the solicits, because obviously Parallax shows up at the splash page at the end of Green Arrow 3. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't really in that issue. Clearly, that was just setting this issue up. So I think when we knew that, when the solicits were saying that Parallax was going to be in this issue, right off the bat, it was like, well, which Parallax is it? Is it going to be? Is it 0 hour Parallax? Is it Convergence Parallax? I think we kind of suspected it was Convergence Parallax, but I think this was the first time we had seen. I think it's the only time we've seen Convergence Parallax since Green Lantern 50 with Venditti.
Yeah.
But there's so much cryptic BS going on here that we have no idea. When and who knows, maybe the next issue might have touched upon. I don't know if you read it, if you were reading this book, if the conversation between the two Ollies might indicate, give a clue about what happened with the future deal that Parallax and Green Arrow made and all this stuff. But this issue doesn't help us with anything. We don't know what in the entire parameters of the deal, why Ollie would do that. Parallax is just so cryptic about this. And it just, you know, the whole fist fight between Hal and Ollie when Ollie drops his weapons and everything, and Parallax turns into Hal Jordan, quote unquote, and they have their fist fight, and then before he cheats, and we have to get the stupid fear entity version of Parallax, which, again, God, that annoys me so much with Convergence Parallax. I still like to know if that's another question, probably for Venditti. We should have asked whether that was, I don't think we ever did, whether that was. But that was his idea to do the fear bug thing popping out, or whether that was editorial. We might have asked something about that. I don't think that we, because if that was his idea, that's horrible. If it was, you know, editorial forced, one of those things editorial forced him to do, then I guess you have to go along with it. It's still stupid. There's no point in doing that if you're going to have this version of the character. Yeah, the art for the most part is good. I mean, there are some times when Parallax doesn't look good. The shoulder pads don't actually look particularly accurate either most of the time, but there are some times when he's standing there with his hair and the way they're drawing his hair that looks good. It is a weird issue because you do get sidetracked with a lot of the stuff, like you said, with the Legion of Superheroes, and even with some of the stuff that's going on at the bar and all this stuff. It's like after Ollie and Hal get zipped away, it's like, I know why they're doing it, because obviously that's what was going on in the Green Arrow book at the time. So they were trying to keep the ongoing story, I guess, the dual stories of what was going on in current time, where they were looking for Ollie and where Ollie was, you know, in the future and what was going on with him. But probably because I certainly was hoping for a more meaningful use of Parallax, and that just seems like it was also a waste.
Yeah, it just seems like they needed Ollie to hop, skip, and jump through time to get the. And Parallax was a way to do that, and because Convergence Parallax was out there, they plucked him for that. You don't learn anything about Parallax. You don't learn where he's been and what he's been doing. He says, until you found me and asked for my help, you said that to avoid another Coast City, I needed to help you keep your family apart by giving you a piece of my own temporal energy, or at least an older version of you. It's hard to keep all this stuff straight nowadays. So he tells us essentially where he's been and that he talked to Ollie, but that only serves the Green Arrow story. That does nothing to... Like, I guarantee you, if we see Convergence, specifically Convergence Parallax, again in Green Lantern storyline, we're not going to circle back to this moment in his timeline of where he's been and what he's been doing.
No, unless Green Arrow happens to be in that issue, then maybe. Yeah. But that's, again, with the current state of editorial, that's assuming people actually even know the story took place 3 years ago. Since this is a 2023 issue, appropriately, since we talked about 2023 being Admiral Influence, that's probably why we were thinking about this once we certainly once you know we knew we were going to start that imprint. I mean, obviously my standards for a Parallax story are pretty high, maybe higher than many people, but it's disappointing. It continues, you know, it continues the run of them doing nothing of consequence with Convergence Parallax. We've had a few moments with Convergence Parallax that have been really cool. They also keep writing, not that this issue isn't so bad with that, but they have, there was that tendency to write Convergence Parallax like he was a moron. Like he was, like his IQ dropped like 30 points, which is ridiculous. I mean, the way he was, the way they had him talk in the actual Convergence miniseries was just mind-boggling, because he was stupid. He was smarter in the Telos series. It still wasn't great Parallax, but it was certainly better than what we saw in the actual Convergence miniseries. And of course, they completely ruined it again, whose ever fault it was in Green Lantern 50 by Robert Venditti. That was the first time the Fear Entity popped out. Which again, they could have done something with that as far as Hal trying to overcome the Fear Entity. And now that he realizes what's inside of him, there could be a good story there. Just like we talked about with the 30th anniversary issue for Zero Hour. It's like, if that Hal Jordan Parallax survived the destruction of that universe, we would actually have a Parallax Hal Jordan that doesn't have an entity in him anymore. So that could be inherently interesting, because he still would have the power. He just wouldn't have the devil whispering on his shoulder all the time. So how much would that affect how he would operate? But nonetheless, so I'll take a Parallax sighting and a use anytime we can get it. But so go ahead.
To be fair, this is not a bad issue. Like, don't get yes, it does it give us anything useful about Parallax? No. But we get to see this artist's rendition of key moments in Green Lantern and Green Arrow history on that first page, all the way up to, in like I mentioned in the recap, straight up recreating that panel sequence from Zero Hour, which I thought was a really cool thing to do. They could have just done whatever they wanted to show that moment, but they chose to recreate the panel sequence, which is cool. You see Speedy shooting up heroin and things like that. You see classic JLA, him and Ollie grabbing each other by the scruff and all of that stuff. You see Hal with his cast and Grey Temples and Mongol in the background. Like, there's really cool moments. We see I like the fact that Ollie knows Hal so well, he's not buying any of this shit. But I also like that we know Parallax well enough to know he's going to try and fuck with him anyways. And that he's doing it. And then that we're kind of taking this tour through Green Lantern and Green Lantern history by talking about Final Night, and by talking about the resurrection of Oliver by Parallax and all of this stuff. So, like, there are cool moments. It's cool to see their relationship on display in this weird way. Obviously, yeah, we don't care about the Green Arrow ongoing stuff with happening in Star City and the Legion of Superheroes and all of that. But it is an interesting interaction in and of itself, and it's done well artistically. It just means nothing in terms of Parallax continuity. So it's like a nothing burger that tastes okay.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It just had been so long since we had seen Convergence Parallax at that point, or certainly so it felt that way. I think it must have been that way. I forget how long the first volume of Robert Venditti's Green Lantern was at this point. Because 2023 must have been when Thorne was doing the Green Lantern book, wasn't it?
I think so.
I'm trying to remember how many. Yeah, because this is the third year Jeremy's been doing the Green Lantern book, right? Because he almost has to be, because we're in the 30s. I guess you are correct. As a general appearance of Parallax, you know, and as an issue by itself, it's fine. It's just the fact that there's so much potential with Convergence Parallax. And that's what always makes it more, that's the tragedy in all this. There was so much potential. Even like when he first showed up in our universe in Venditti's run, and he finds out there's a Sinestro Corps, and that there's all these other yellow yellow lanterns are following Sinestro of all people, and how pissed off he is about that, and how he just takes out those yellow lanterns so quick. and about how the universe is in darkness, but you know, Parallax will bring the dawn or something like that. That there's so much, and then they just and then it just quickly devolves into the fear, you know, the fear bug crap, and just ruins it. So, and he's out there somewhere, you know. Eventually, I mean, I guess it's good that we knew that, you know, they didn't retcon him out of existence. So, which would kind of be hard for someone who can time skip and universe hop to begin with. But I would like to see a Convergence Parallax sighting or use. Green Lantern 50 is around the corner, assuming that book survives that long.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see.
All right, what's next?
All right, so ever so briefly, what I have seen, I saw Obsession last week. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about it. Let's just say Obsession is a really, really, really good horror movie. It's still relatively early in the year, but I think it's pretty straightforward. It would be in the top five right now easily of the movies that I've seen this year. It's really good, really interesting.
Freaky. Including Project Hail Mary?
Well, Project Hail Mary probably would be number one, but I'm trying. Yeah. I would actually have to go back through everything I've seen this year to see how many things that I really, really liked to begin with and things that I thought were really, really effective. Project Hail Mary, I'm sure, remains number one of what I've actually seen this year. But I would say that Obsession definitely falls into the top five easily. It's a really well-made horror movie. There are times when it might drag a little bit, but it's very, very, very well acted. The cast is very good in this movie. So I would highly recommend seeing Obsession. I think it certainly was better than the trailer. I only think I saw one trailer for this. I don't know if they did put out more than one, but that other one, if they did, it was the only one I saw was, I think, the teaser trailer. And the trailer really doesn't do justice for the movie. The movie's really good. So I would highly recommend seeing that. And I guess that leads us now into our next and final major topic, which is the discussion of the Second Lanterns trailer that dropped yesterday.
Mm-hmm. All 1 minute and 57 seconds.
Of yes, 1:57. Of green. We see green.
Green and space. So what else are you guys going to complain about?
We see red. We see yellow. Looks like we see Sinestro.
No, I'm just making it because everybody's like, where's all the green, or where's the space in a show about space cops? Well, now you get both. What else are you going to complain about? Being halfway facetious.
Yeah,
then,
yeah, like, you are. You're clearly because I was just going to say, that being said, we all know the first trailer was mostly underwhelming. They should have. And it's still. And again, we discussed this when we talked with Will, that the odds are the reason why was because, again, they were not trying to grab us as in the part of the audience that we represent, because they know they have us. They could lose us, but they know they're not going to lose us with a teaser trailer. So the point was to try to draw people in that would not normally give a rat's ass about a superhero TV show by playing up the true detective aspect of it. And then in the second trailer, introduce more of the cosmic elements to it like they did here.
Plus, but not so much that it rounds out the true detective stuff, which is what we still get a very strong sense of in this.
Yeah, that's still the overwhelming tone in this. Plus, even before this trailer dropped, it had already been confirmed that we're dealing with two distinct timelines in the show. Mm-hmm. That we're dealing with 2016 and essentially 2026. And obviously, that being said, as the trailer shows you, plus we're going to be dealing with flashbacks to begin with, which go way beyond just the 10-year. The 10 years difference in the stories, because you see John Stewart as a little kid. You see what I assume is the funeral for Hal's father. Mm-hmm. You see lots of stuff. So you see young Hal from John Stewart's eyes. So the reality is, while we're going to have two dueling storylines, 2016, 2026, or obviously certainly the trailer indicates that we're going to get a lot of flashbacks to stuff that goes way beyond 10 years ago as well. One of the more intriguing parts of the trailer was the Laura Linney thing. Because that certainly would seem to shoot down the part that any concept that she could be playing Carol Ferris.
Yeah.
Makes you think she's playing a guardian or something in human form or something along those lines, because she seems to be cheering on Jon Stewart to go take what's his. So I mean, it could be somebody else, you know, but then again.
I'm sorry. I got to say, I think my favorite aspect of this entire trailer to the point where like, teaser. It's official teaser number two is what it's called. I feel like what I liked the most about this that actually almost gave me goosebumps in like, oh, that's a really awesome way to pitch this and like, you know, kind of advertise it, is the whole "Are you afraid?" again and again and again, and showing the different aspects of how that phrase would be addressed in the show between different characters and different moments.
Yes, that was particularly effective and obviously particularly appropriate based on what we're dealing with here, conceptually with Green Lanterns.
Mm-hmm.
And tying it again and having the backside of Sinestro, so to speak, mm-hmm. but seemingly seeing Hal visit Sinestro in prison, which might be what that ice planet might be. That's what it looks like. Mm-hmm. But
could be
again,
a science cell, could be. Yeah.
Again, the way things are cut together, that planet or that ice planet may not be the science cells. It may not be the prison. It may not be anything like that. It just could be the way it's sliced together. But it
looks kind of like Krypton did. Like if you
it does. It does look very. It does look very Krypton-like.
Yeah, like if you were to take Krypton from the first movie, obviously poor graphics and stuff at the time, but because there was that. There was the dome, obviously, in the first movie. But other than that, the rest of the city was sort of built into the wall of these like deep canyons, right?
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah. Okay.
That will be curious to see. We get to see constructs. That's a plus.
Mm-hmm. Powerful constructs. And that very first one blocking the space laser or whatever that is.
And yeah, without hesitation, without any real strain at all, like when Hal creates the shield to stop the bullets, mm-hmm. which again, personally, I think that's the way it should be. Kind of, and we saw that. I mean, to be fair, in this universe, we already saw a guy doing stuff like that.
Yeah, with
like,
a flick of his wrist.
Yes,
yeah.
That guy, and to me, that's really the way. Not everybody should be able to wield the ring, but if you can wield the ring and you're good at it, that's what it should be. That's one of the things about the whole. You know, the Geoff Johns thing, like in Green Lantern Rebirth with how it basically felt like when Ollie was trying to use the ring and it basically felt like he was passing a kidney stone.
Yeah, it becomes a part of them. Is that
what it feels like? And Kyle, it's like, yeah, every single time. It's like, no, it shouldn't really be that. It shouldn't feel like you're freaking passing a kidney stone every time you're making a goddamn energy construct. So I do like the idea that if you know what you're doing, it's second nature. And it's because that is what would distinguish a great Green Lantern from an average Green Lantern is, you know, the power of the and if your will is not as strong, then yeah, you can make a construct, but it's going to buckle if you're squaring off with somebody whose will is stronger and who knows what the hell they're doing and has done it a gazillion times.
I thought it was weird. We'll get to the social media stuff in a little bit, but I posted a reaction video on TikTok and then took that content and posted on Instagram Reels and Twitter and stuff like that as well.
Which I watched.
I didn't know. Cool. Thanks for watching, man.
No, check is in the mail.
I was surprised at the fact that Hal is apparently public in the flashback we see of Jon Stewart watching Hal in an interview on TV, which like – in story makes sense. Like if you were thinking, divorce all this from what we know about Lantern continuity. If a human being taken within the context of what we know about this DC universe from that opening scene, opening narrative scene on screen in the Superman movie about what 30 years since we knew superhumans existed or something like that.
Something, yeah, that would make sense because it was all in multiples of three.
Yeah, if one of our, if a human, like not a Kryptonian and not, you know, this Amazonian Wonder Woman, or like if a regular standard human who may or may not, depending on the story, have once been in our Air Force and so on and so forth, was chosen to be a member of this cosmic force and represent us out in space. I promise I'm not trying to figure out ways to defend the show. Do I like the fact that Hal doesn't have a secret identity apparently? No, even in the past? No, but there are ways it could make sense in universe that he wouldn't. Plus, hasn't the argument been for years among Green Lantern fans like, why does Hal need a secret identity anyways anymore? He doesn't really do anything with the Hal Jordan identity to begin with.
Yeah, and it certainly would make it easy. It certainly would make it easy about the duality of him trying to keep a friggin' job, which is kind of pointless because at any given moment he's going to be dragged away.
Yeah. So like, it's shocking that he's public in this flashback. We're seeing this interview of him on TV, but it can make sense. So I don't hate it. I don't know. That's the only thing that really stood out to me.
Yeah. I mean, that was. I'm trying to phrase it the right way. I agree with you that was a little bit of a surprise. I don't have a big issue with it. It is a different take, but you know, it's not a, like you said, it's not a surprising take based on some of the things we already know. I mean, Guy Gardner seems to be pretty public. I mean, we know Guy's more of an attention whore by nature, but still, I mean, it just seems this is the world. This is kind of the world that they live in from a secret identity perspective. It's not as big a deal. Before I go into that part, obviously, I mean, if you look at this, it seems pretty straightforward. One or two things is going on here. And with the duality of the two stories, even if it does come to pass, whether you know, there's no subtlety involved, they obviously, if they do a season two, which we'll talk about in a few minutes too, that they could still have Hal in it no matter what they do with him by the end of this, because they're telling stories in different timelines. But the fact that they're either doing one of two things, either they're not being subtle at all that Hal's going to be dead by the end of this series, or they're just, it's the whole expectation thing. They're just beating you over the head so much with the fact that Hal's going to be dead that it's a misdirection, because the fact that Hal, you get the impression that Hal has no, he sees himself as Green Lantern. And that's all he is. So when he's talking all the time about basically you're going to the only way I'm not going to be Green Lantern or someone else is going to be Green Lantern is when I'm dead, is because he can't imagine being anything else but Green Lantern. He can't imagine So the show in theory could be about Hal coming to the realization one way or the other that yet he actually has a life and he can live and be happy without having to be Green Lantern. So he may not be a Green Lantern when it ends, but he's not dead. So, I think it's pretty, it's very, very, very likely one of those two things is going to happen. Either they're doing it to subvert expectations. It's like, see, you thought we were going to kill him off, and that's not even counting the whole parallax possibility. Just the fact that, oh, you thought he was going to die, but no, see, we got, it's like we built up that, you were sure we were going to do that, ha, ha, ha. Or they're just making it crystal clear. It's like, why did you think he wasn't going to die? We were practically telling you he was going to die. But,
well, there's also the rumor out there right now, unconfirmed, as far as I'm aware, that Kyle is a part of Man of Tomorrow.
Yeah, and if he is, I doubt he's Green Lantern.
That puts some weight on the other end of the scale in the fact that he could not retire or be dead by the end of this series. Like, there are still things out there that point to that as much as point to him potentially being dead.
I think I thought it was more confirmed essentially that he was going to be part of the animated show. That's what I think he's supposed to be part of.
No, there's reports that he's supposed to be part of Man of Tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't think I've read that. That doesn't mean it's not true, but I just know that most of the chatter has been about that he and Jessica Cruz might be in the next with Superman, which leads into the thing with Green Lantern, the Jessica Cruz show too. But yeah, we'll see about that. I still don't like the dynamic, the Hal and Kyle. Excuse me, you got me saying that's on you. The Hal and John dynamic about them being at each other's throats and. One guy's like, I'm never leaving, and the other guy's like, I'm pushing you out as quickly as I can because I'm better than you and better than you ever have been or ever would be. I don't like that dynamic. I think people are gonna have a, maybe in the show it will make more sense. It might make more sense and it might be more palatable, but I still think that's a slippery slope to keep going on, where just as much as Hal being a dick to John all the time, just the idea that Hal, that John is constantly saying, you're not good at this. I haven't even used this ring once, but I know I'm going to be better than you've ever been. And it's like, that just kind of reeks of a little bit too much. There's a fine line between self-confidence and egotism. And that kind of looks to me like it's really walking that line really, really tightly.
Yeah. The, The only other thing I didn't like was him talking about how he got the ring, and he's like, I sure as hell didn't interview for it. And John says, well, maybe you should have, because power like that, you shouldn't have power like that. You should earn. Yeah, you should earn or whatever, which like I get his point coming from like being a Marine and so on and so forth. Also, the idea, you know, that to be the argument out that's out there are our current law enforcement, police officers or whatever. Are they really getting enough training? Are they getting enough training and understanding the nuances of law and so on and so forth, and their weapons training and when and to escalate and not escalate and so on? Like, there, that's a big argument out there about being more present in that and how there should be some more training and so on and so forth. So, like, I get where it's going with that, but also I think it would be interesting to see John come to understand the idea of being chosen and what that means and why somebody is chosen and setting that up. So I think that's an interesting way to make the idea of being chosen mean something by actually struggling with it in the story, so that John comes to learn what that means on screen. And thus, you know, that carries weight for us moving forward in this universe. When and if we see someone chosen for this role, and how much weight that should carry. But at the same time, I just don't like that argument. So.
No, again, because it comes down to the fundamental, what you fundamentally believe a Green Lantern is supposed to be and why people get chosen. That because you understand, and again, Hal's kind of being a dick, borderline. Again, we don't have the context of the conversation that led up to Hal making that statement, that part of the conversation entirely. Well, we don't necessarily have it, but when Hal's making the taking a shot at John, like, I sure did an interview for it, which of course that might tie into something we find out about how John's in this position of being why he's basically being chosen to be trained, because maybe there was a small list of finalists and he actually literally did pass a one-on-one interview test to get to the point where he was put into, well, yes, we're going to train this guy next. But either way, the point is, we know Hal's point. Hal didn't have to do an interview because he literally was chosen the way Green Lanterns were usually chosen. The ring chose you for your worthiness because your proximity, but you were there. The point is, the ring picked you because it saw something in you. And that's the reason why you didn't have to go through this checklist of, oh yeah, you need, if okay, you got the ring, but we need 5 references by tomorrow in order for you to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to, that dynamic between the two of them, you'd like to think that, again, some of this is misdirect, and a lot of the stuff, like we talked about with Will, is going to be in the first few episodes. And as the show plays out, that they're going to be in a different place, and they're not going to have this pure adversarial relationship. But it is still very, very interesting that they're choosing to go down that road. So far, we've gotten 2 trailers. We probably can assume we'll have a third, at least. But it's still interesting. They're really doubling down on that, you know, kind of like the, as I said before, like the Bizarro Lethal Weapon relationship. It's like, I'm not too old for this shit. Yes, you are. Retire.
Yeah. And then season 2.
Yep. So season 2. Hey, we're actually borderline on time for a change. Now, even though this is not confirmed yet, of course, but there's already talk about there's some shakeup potentially in season 2. If there's going to be a season 2. That, I guess, there's the early stages of season 2 are being plotted out, with Christopher Cantwell joining the series as writer and producer. Chris Mundy is expected to stay as the showrunner, but Damon Lindelof and Tom King are supposed to be taking back from being creatives in the show. They might still stay on as producers, but they're not going to be actively involved either in writing or the true creative aspect of this. So that would be quite interesting if that turns out to be true, which also might not necessarily mean all that much, because I guess Tom King is working on a Mr. Miracle project, and it looks like Lindelof is working on another HBO miniseries, The Chain. So this may just be just the way it goes. It may not be, oh, they're being pushed out for any particular reason. Needless to say, I'm not going to be unhappy, certainly, about losing King, and I probably am not going to cry too much about losing Lindelof, even though I like Lindelof a little bit better than King. But we'll see. It doesn't necessarily mean, I think it's way too early to read into whether this is a positive or a negative, because we haven't seen what the product is yet.
Yep.
And, you know, because we haven't seen what the product looks like, we don't know if we're going to mourn losing Tom King.
Yeah, that's what I mean. We could actually like, one way or the other, we could actually like, even if we don't, it's not 100% thumbs up, that it's like 90% thumbs up. So we might not. So even though, like for me, like I don't like Tom King, but the reality is that it might be, well, okay, in this project, in a way, regardless of what percentage is owed to everybody for the success or, you know, the stew that was made, how many cooks made this stew in the kitchen, stirring the pot, the reality is it might work. So, but again, we don't know. We have no way of knowing how, if this is going to be something else. Like, yeah, we want to see a season two, but we're kind of glad they're switching directions, or it's like, okay, we really enjoyed season one as a whole. So it kind of, so it makes you nervous about rocking the boat and changing creative, but we don't know that yet. So but we have to see.
Alrighty. So over on social media, we just wrapped up a campaign, or I just wrapped up a campaign. I say campaign loosely. I didn't pay a dime for any of this. This wasn't advertised for views or clicks or engagement or anything like that. I decided that, well, first of all American Comics number 16 is cover dated for July. That is the first appearance of Alan Scott, our first introduction to a character known as Green Lantern. But because cover dates are always in advance of newsstand dates, going as far back as the 1940s is a little hard to establish specific newsstand dates. It's a little easier, like Silver Age and onward and stuff. That said, it is relatively largely believed that All Americans Comics number 16 hit stands on May 17th of 1940. For a long time, DC has been posting things like, it's Batman Day, and it's Superman Day, and so on and so forth. And inevitably, you'll get people like us or other Green Lantern fans posting under those going, well, what about Green Lantern Day? And they haven't made an effort to do that. So I figured if DC wasn't going to do it, we should, or at least give it a try. So I decided to use May 17th as Green Lantern Day and to post about Green Lantern Day being on May 17th every day from the 1st of May until obviously Green Lantern Day, May 17th. And I did that.
And then was banned.
I did that primarily over on Twitter because as much as I hate it, it's where we have the biggest audience. So if I was going to try something, I was going to try it there. Now that that campaign has been wrapped up, I have all the impressions from that. We have 53,000 plus views across all of those posts, over 1,300 total likes, over 250 retweets or reposts, over 170 total comments and replies, and 150 plus bookmarks. And our followers jumped up actually from about 1754 to, I think right now, I told Mark the other day it was 1806. Now it's at, I think 1810. Yeah, 1810. So we gained 50 plus followers from that. So that's, don't get me wrong, that's not bad, but that's not why I did it. Is it cool? Is it nice to get that engagement? Sure, absolutely. That's a good side bet. But the whole thing was just Green Lantern Day. Get out there on whatever social media you use and post about Green Lantern using the hashtag Green Lantern Day so that we can find each other and like each other's posts and, you know, just whatever. On Twitter, there were about 50 different posts or so of people either using the hashtag Green Lantern Day or, and it was about 50-50 of this, either hashtag or just using the term Green Lantern Day without the hashtag. Is that pretty good for a first-time thing? Sure, absolutely. We didn't pay a dime for this, and we didn't have a whole lot of followers, and so on. So it's interesting to get this level of engagement. What I learned from all of this is, first of all, I always find a dark side to the moon here. I still saw tons of posts about Green Lantern on Twitter and other social media that had no mention of Green Lantern Day and no use of the hashtag, even from people I had seen previously interacting with those posts. So I found it a little disheartening that so many of us Green Lantern fans give DC shit for not celebrating a Green Lantern Day themselves. But when somebody tries to do it and you see that and you engage with that content in advance of the day, but still don't post for the day, it's a little disheartening. How are we supposed to celebrate and get this information out there if you guys aren't going to engage with it more so? Like, I think it's really impressive the amount of engagement we got. And I'm not hyping myself up. I just think for somebody like us who have been podcasting for 18 years it's circled back around. We're not news anymore. We're just this old podcast that's been out there and people are still discovering us to this day. We don't have a ton of followers and so on and so forth. So it's not like we have a massive cachet to cash in on other than the fact that we've been doing this so long. So it's not like, you know, we're really getting our tendrils out there on social media. So for us to get the amount of engagement we did off of this is impressive. But if someone's going to try and make this happen, even if somebody else takes the torch next year or something like that, aside from us, I still encourage you guys who are listening, just, I don't know, put it in your calendar as a recurring event. May 17th forevermore is going to be Green Lantern Day. So that you get a notification on your phone to make a post or celebrate or whatever it is you want to do. Because I would like it to get out there, and I don't want it to get out there as the Lantern Cast started this. I would be fine with, you know, 10 years from now, someone being like, Green Lantern Day was a thing. Who created it? Oh, I don't know, but somebody did. And we now celebrate it now. Obviously I don't mean like a national holiday or anything, but I would like the whole, well, what about Green Lantern Day to stop? Because it was actually interesting because we talked about today's teaser. The teaser for the teaser dropped on Green Lantern Day.
Yeah, that is true.
So even though DC didn't participate and use the hashtag or mention Green Lantern Day in any way, shape, or form at all, in any official capacity or unofficial capacity, they still participated, kind of. So... yeah, because Green Lantern was a big topic that day. I didn't plan it that way, but it happened. Maybe DC acknowledged it without actually saying it. Who the hell knows why they chose that? But yeah, I don't know. Is Sunday a weird day or not? Is Monday a weird day to drop a teaser?
No, I don't think so. No, I think there's been stuff that's dropped on Mondays before.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we lots of posts. Also interesting what you guys apparently are interested in on social media. I would think with us being the Lanternologists, it would be, you know, fun facts about Green Lantern and, you know, odd, you know, history moments or spotlights on certain characters or the content we produce. But according to all the metrics and everything I took in, our most popular posts were ones where we were just asking things like, who's your favorite Green Lantern? Or what was your introduction to Green Lantern? Basically anything in which allowed you guys to tell us your story about how you came to this franchise and what you like about it. That's what you chose to engage with. You didn't choose to, obviously there was still engagement on some of these posts, but not nearly as much as the ones where you got to tell your personal history in some way, shape, or form with the franchise. But post about like original art or fact. I did like a whole 12 list of facts that I posted. I also posted like let's do this one day. Let's do a merchandise thread. Show me what you guys have in your collection, like that sort of a thing. All of those performed far less as like who's your favorite Green Lantern or what introduced you to Green Lantern or what's your favorite story type posts. So as we get closer to Lanterns, I bring all of this engagement up because I do have a question for you guys. Are you guys okay with me following that? Are you okay with me just leaning into the skid of what gets more engagement so that we can have some more eyes on us as we get closer to Lanterns? Because to me, it feels like pandering to just straight up follow that. Well, this is getting traction, so if this is going to get attention, I'm going to keep doing this thing. I would prefer to do the fun facts and stuff, but it seems like, and I'm not trying to be rude here to the audience, it just seems like y'all don't necessarily care about that stuff. So in an effort to just kind of spread the good word of the Lantern Cast as we get closer to Lanterns, are you guys okay with me just dumbing it down and leaning into the skid? How do you feel about how we engage with you on social media?
Not sure if we ended that on a high note, Chad, but...
Well, no, to be honest with you, I would like their feedback. I just... Because it is very hard to argue with the facts. When I look at a single one of those posts from those 17, 18 days, and one singular post, the most popular one, was about who your favorite Lantern is, and that singular post got 18K views. That got 18K out of the 53K total that we got across the entire campaign. That it's hard to argue with numbers, but I'm not trying to build my own ego here, but the creative side of me, or whatever, the part of me that wants to post something more unique or more thought provoking, or like just some historical information about this franchise or character history or whatever, I would much prefer to do that. But the evidence is telling me something else. So what do you guys want to hear from us?
That part is true. It would be curious to see what people have to say.
For sure. But I did have a really quick question for you, since you mentioned the other day you finished Project Hail Mary, the book. I was thinking about this the other day, just as something to go out on. Do you think it's weird how the reveal that Ryland was drugged and thrown on the ship was handled so casually in the movie compared to the reveal that it was in the book?
Again, it's kind of tough to answer this from the perspective that, because I saw the movie first, I didn't have a big issue with either way it was handled. I think why they did it in the movie. I think the time and the place and the way that it's revealed is important based on the events that are going on in the movie and to show that regardless of the fact that he was shanghaied, the reality is the decision behind doing it was wrong on one level from a moral perspective, but still was right, because then, like talking about our Green Lantern tie-in, that he was chosen for a reason.
Yeah.
He was chosen because he was inherently worthy, and he was the most worthy and the most qualified for what had to be done. And even if he didn't realize it in the moment of truth, he did realize it. Now, would he have realized it if he had woken up and had all his memories instantaneously? That's another story altogether. At least if you look at it from the movie perspective, who knows? Maybe not. Maybe he just would have been too freaked out and too scared to be able to buckle down and do what needed to be done. But at the end of the day, it worked out the way it was supposed to, and he was chosen for the same reason. So I think it works in both. I think it works in both. Because in many ways, I mean, the stuff on Earth, I think that's why they streamline some of the stuff too. That it's some of the stuff that's happening on Earth,
is like not the melting of the poles.
Yeah, and then solar panels and all that. It's interesting, but it's not critical to what's actually, you know, to the. They got away with it just by not making it clear that, oh, we only have this number of years before everything's going to go to hell. They give you a general range of, oh, within a certain number of years, that's when things would be. What this world would be like, but it's not like, oh, you know, guess what? Even if we start building the ship tomorrow and work as fast as humanly possible and get it launched and there's no problems, that there's no way we're going to get the information that we need, even if everything goes right before the world is already gone to hell, almost, in, you know, to a point of no return, and so many, you know, billions of people are dead, that they don't go into the specifics, so it makes it plausible that he can do that. Yeah, I didn't have a big issue with that it was handled in two different ways.
I remember feeling it was really low key when I was watching the movie in the theaters, but that I attributed that to having read the book. So now that it's out on digital and everybody on YouTube is posted, all the reaction channels are posting their reactions to it. I've been watching several reactions to the movie back to back to back, and everybody I'm seeing, including the people who never read the book, now that I get to watch other people's reaction, a lot of people are like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like, no, nobody's surprised by what Strahd ends up doing to Ryland. So, which I remember reading the book and be like, oh, he never volunteered for this.
It was just a much bigger reveal, it felt like, in the book, and it just shocked me, honestly, a little bit that, oh, it really was a little bit low-key and almost slightly telegraphed in the movie as opposed to it wasn't the way it was in the book. But we don't have to harp on it. I just thought it was weird. Something I realized, you know, now that other people are able to see the film.
Makes sense.
All right. If people want to reach out to us, what do they do?
Right before I do that, congratulations to the Knicks for coming back from a 22-point deficit with like 7.5 minutes left to go in the game, and they won in overtime. Unbelievable. They were getting destroyed. Suck that, Cleveland. Okay, so lanterncast.com. The email is lanterncast@gmail.com. If you can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, #GLcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, yes, you bastards. Podbean, and wherever you listen to us on, please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, like Corwin, and I think we'll do Corwin next week, because that might be a nice little bookend towards with the episode that we're doing, since we might have more viewing, more viewers than usual, or listeners, I should say, actually, technically. So 708 Lantern for text or voicemail, and let us know what you think.
And speaking of... next episode is the beginning of GL June, where we'll be covering the Flash and Green Lantern, the Brave and the Bold miniseries. We will be covering it across the Lantern Cast, Lanterns Live, Mosaic Comics, Emerald Echo, Green Lanterns Podcast, and the Podcast of Oa throughout the month of June. Each one of those shows covering in their own way, shape, or form a single issue up until the Podcast of Oa wraps us at the end of the month. 1 month, 6 issues. The core assembles. GL June starts next episode.
You betcha.
Talk to you later, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.